progress for a Canadian naturalistic driving study, which will piggyback on many aspects of the SHARP II study. And just to sort of establish a pattern, Joanne is also a 7-year veteran on the Safety Technical Coordinating Committee. So if Joanne is here. Joanne Harbaugh.
Well, thanks for the introduction, Ken. As Ken mentioned, I'm here today to provide an update on a Canadian naturalistic driving study. And it will be brief. And as soon as I learn how to use this.
Right arrow.
Right. Great. Okay, first of all, just to give you some background and to say a little bit about the Canadian Naturalistic Driving Study, or the CNDS, as we're using for our acronym. It's Canada's contribution to this SHARP II project, and it's a really great opportunity to build on successful partnership that goes back quite a ways to the original SHARP project that was done in 1988. And so in this way, there'll be an opportunity to contribute Canadian data to the U.S. effort. And since highway safety is such an important major focus of SHARP II, the naturalistic driving study is the centerpiece of this research. So it's really important, we think, for Canada to be involved in that as well. A bit of background, how we got to the point we're at today. It's been going on for a while, and I know I've made presentations on this before, but it started a number of years ago, actually, in 2009, where the business case was actually presented to the Council of Deputy Ministers of Transport in Canada. And it was warmly received then, but it's taken a while to get the project going. And the original plan was to have two locations with 250 drivers. And the data, again, early on, where it was decided that they would be contributed to the U.S. database as well. And there's a lot of value in that for comparison purposes. And at that time, in 2009, the council member agencies were to contribute most of the funding, and the balance was to be raised from other sources. But things get revised as time goes on. And so the project scope was revised earlier this year in the spring of 2012. And it's important to note that for the U.S. project, Virginia Tech is the primary contractor for the U.S. NDS. And it's important they've been involved in pioneering NDS research. They've developed the DAS package, the instrumentation package, and also all the work that's got into the database management analysis tools. And so for the Canadian project as well, Virginia Tech was invited to prepare and submit a proposal for the Canadian project, and it needed to fit our available budget, maximize benefit for road safety researchers. And the way it's worked is that Virginia Tech will have the responsibility for most aspects of the study, the driver recruitment, the data collection, and field operations. And that consistency for the Canadian side is really important. It adds great value to the data and the ability to use the data for analyses. So in terms of the revised scope, it's been scaled down to one test location at this point. And the proposal is that it will be in Western Canada. There'll be 125 data acquisition packages that will be used. And the scheduling for this is done to maximize the data collection. And the way it will work is it will enable 175 driver years of data to be collected over 2 years, the dates being 2012 to 2014. Data collection, I should mention, hasn't started yet. The project is in the early stages, and Virginia Tech will be involved with housing the collected data. And what's important is that this new project, the new scope, fits within the funding commitments provided by the council and also by the CCMTA, that's the Canadian Council of Motor Traffic Administrators. But in terms of where it's going to be, thought this map was kind of useful. What we have portrayed here is that the SHARP II sites are there in the circles. And the really fuzzy Canadian maple leaf shows that it's going to be in Western Canada somewhere, but the actual site is not determined at this point. And so it's looking as though it would be in either Alberta or BC. But regardless of the exact location, that Western site is a useful one in terms of providing additional balance to the Western part of North America for data collection as well. So my understanding is that as this meeting goes on, decisions are being made about the exact location. And so in summary, just to provide a bit of a summary here, the CNDS then has been recast to maximize potential benefits for road safety research while remaining within the available budget. And this project is important. It enhances Canada's research partnership with the U.S. SHARP II naturalistic driving study. And it's important because it's going to contribute Canadian data to this landmark undertaking. And that's my brief summary.
We have time for questions.
Yes.
Are you collecting any roadway data?
Okay, I was anticipating that question this morning about will there be collection of roadway data. As the project is set right now, there really isn't a component that looks at that. But once the site is selected, they'll certainly be looking at what is available currently and if there is any possibility of getting additional data as well. Questions?
You mentioned that your data would be compatible with the data.
If they're compatible, but you as Canada will continue to own and have stewardship of your database. Is that correct?
That is correct. It's Canadian data, but it will be housed at Virginia Tech, and so that the analyses, they can be combined for analysis.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you.
Before I introduce Monique and Richard, let me put in, we have an ad right now. This is an advertisement for ANITSA. NHTSA is redesigning the NAS data system, I think everything, and they are looking for comments to the Federal Register. Chalan, would you give a couple more details on that?
I'm Xiaolin Chen. I'm the Office Director of the Traffic Records and Analysis at NHTSA's National Center for Statistic Analysis. I think this morning we heard the excitement about SHARP II, but we also have excitement about our database. Primary is that the National Automobile Sampling System, I think Dr. Chenard mentioned that it's a weird name. We're also looking for input that maybe you can change a more catchy and meaningful name for that. So the primary, the Congress gave us $25 million to, revamp this whole system. Unfortunately, that we have to do this in a very quick way, so we don't have the luxury have 7 years to design the whole system. So the primary, the goal for this is that we were looking into the data elements, what's the data elements there, because even in the NHTSA, our needs is kind of shift from it used to be a more crashworthiness to a more crash avoidance kind of area of the focus. So we were looking into the data element, but we also were looking into the whole sample design and the data collection protocol. So hopefully that the new system will be adapted to the needs more quickly. And also we will modernize the whole IT infrastructure because the system is there has been 30 years, so it's a lot of the new technology we haven't been adapted to. And the final one is to really have a new data collection methods. And because a lot of the measurement, a lot of the way we collect data are also kind of invented almost 30 years ago. So those are the elements that we are going to looking into. So also Congress kind of mandated us to solicit the input from the broader stakeholders. So we already put it out a Federal Register notice, and I think last month, and the period is a month, so actually it will be expired in July 20th. Until now, we haven't received any comment yet. So we are in a panic mode. So I would like to kind of make the announcement here that we was really invited all of you to make a comment in any aspects of this database. I don't know how many of you have been heard or used NAS. Can I get a... Oh, wow. Okay, so you are our stakeholders. So please go to the Federal Register. I have a few copies with me of the Federal Register notes. If you wanted to, I can give it to you. Otherwise, please come, you know, go to the Federal Register to really, you know, if you really kind of see that you wanted to continue use data and make improvement, this is the opportunity. And again, the time is very short for us to do the things, because for 25 million, Congress wants us to spend it in 2 years. So we don't have a lot of time to do the design. That's why we kind of compact the whole thing. Thank you.
If you search the NAS webpage,
yeah, we should have. Okay. We are, you know, that. Yeah. So if you go to our site, and then you can go there. Yeah.
Okay. So input, what I was asking is if you found the NAS webpage, would there be a link there? And we think there is. So, all right. So now we're into the longer-term question of what happens after SHARP ends with the data, because as was shown on a slide that David had up and Kenneth said, we're hoping this database is going to be a viable used database for 15 to 20 years by researchers. And the issue is, okay, who owns it? Who are the stewards? Who's going to make it available to researchers in the future? And that's the topic that Monique Evans and Richard Compton are going to talk about. Monique's FHWA's director of the Office of Safety Research and Development. I hope I get these right. And Richard, both of these are our liaisons on the TCC. Richard is director of NHTSA's Behavioral Safety Research Office. Did I get it?
Yes.
Okay. Monique?
Thanks, Forrest. Well, before I get started, in the interest of sharing panic mode with my other federal colleagues, most of you, or maybe a lot of you, know Ray Kremis, who's the technical director in my office, has been for quite some time. I'm not sure if you're aware that he took a position in the Office of Safety. He's going to be on Mike Griffith's team starting next week. So we have a vacancy in our office, and we're looking for a seasoned, strong candidate who's interested in helping us move forward on national safety R&D issues related to highways. So think about it, and if you're interested, give me your contact information, and I'll be happy to make sure you get the vacancy announcement when we get it posted. So where is the right arrow? All right. Okay, so basically, the Department of Transportation believes, like most of us do, that the NDS and the roadway data files are going to be a long-term resource for developing and evaluating driver support and crash avoidance technologies that we think are going to make a significant contribution to the highway safety field. And so as a result, we're working with Volpe to develop options for the long-term stewardship and ownership of this data for a period of at least 20 years. I mean, you heard David and many others mention that. I want to acknowledge Anna Lynn Lacombe, who's in here, and her team at Volpe, who's doing the work on this particular study, and they're doing a fabulous job with that. So if you've got additional questions in our evening reception, feel free to bend her ear about that as well. We're also sponsoring two exploratory advanced research studies to support implementation of the SHARP 2 safety data. One is a study on automated video decoding and feature extraction, which is currently in contracting, and the other is a video analytics workshop, which is scheduled for this fall. In addition, we're in the process of defining internal research priorities that we plan to address using the SHARP 2 safety data. So today I'm going to spend the bulk of my time giving you a high-level overview of the Volpe Stewardship and Ownership Study, and I'll wrap up by briefly elaborating on the other three efforts. So you've heard a few people mention this. Why are we really looking at ownership and stewardship, and why are we doing it now? Well, really, it's all about maximizing the value of the research investment. And Ken, I don't know, do you know offhand the total amount we've spent for SHARP 2 safety research?
The current budget is $66 million.
$66 million.
We haven't spent much of it. That's
Okay. So that's our budget, and it's by far the lion's share of the investment out of all four Sharp 2 safety categories, or Sharp 2 categories, period. So, you know, I think it would be a tragedy if at the end of this study we couldn't maximize the value of that investment. That's a tremendous amount of money, time, resources, intellectual capital, you name it. And if we can't use that for the life, the intended life of the data afterwards, I think we've done a disservice to ourselves as well as to the people, the taxpayers who've invested that money and entrusted us to do this work. You know, as you've heard, this data is expected to have a 20 to 30 year lifespan, and maintaining anything for that long requires significant planning. What needs to be in place to make sure that researchers can easily access the data for that period of time? How will this be financed over the life of that data? How do we adjust organizational or technological changes, especially when it comes to establishing and maintaining the infrastructure that's going to be needed to make over a petabyte worth of data easily accessible yet appropriately secure? What are the roles and requirements of different stakeholders, and how do they affect the institutional requirements for data and system security and cost to the owners, stewards, and users? The answers to these questions are more complicated than one might initially think. So because Sharp 2 is scheduled to end in March of 2015, the department felt it was important to start looking at these issues early enough so that we can help ensure a smooth transition to the implementation phase once the NDS is completed. So the goal of this particular study is to provide options, not recommendations, options, for the long-term stewardship and ownership of the NDS and the roadway data that ensure four different things. The privacy of the study participants is safeguarded by providing data security and protection at levels that are at or better than current best practices and that fully comply with all relevant standards. Impediments to accessing the data by a wide variety of government and non-government researchers are minimized. We want to make sure that anybody who's interested and excited about using this have pretty good access to getting at it, that the system is sustainable for the 20 years or more that it's expected to be relevant, and that costs associated with establishing and supporting, as well as maintaining an accessible and secure system, are minimized. We don't want this to be so expensive that people just give up and say it's not worth it. So the tasks for this study are basically divided into four categories. They did a review of background information, and that was quite extensive. They looked at a variety of things, including research reports, contract documents, the protocol and consent forms, and other pertinent materials. And they conducted this task by, or they concluded this task, excuse me, by providing an annotated list of all content that they reviewed that was relevant to the next two tasks. And I think you guys completed this back in December, if I'm not mistaken. So that was followed by the environmental scan, and that focused on identifying and reviewing other existing large-scale databases, research databases, I might add, that linked video databases to record-based systems with sensitive personal information. It also examined how these databases are operated and financed and how they address data security and privacy issues. So Volpe initially looked at, I believe, 10 different databases for inclusion in this particular scan, but they soon discovered that none of them met all of the initial selection criteria that was established for adding it in. In particular, there were only two databases that included video data or images, and only one linked large image data sets to a relational database or record-based system like the Sharp 2 safety data is. So for these reasons, the requirements that a database include video or images and that some of the video be linked to a record-based system were dropped from the selection. So with that in mind, they narrowed that original list of 10 down to four, and the four databases that they looked at were the Census Bureau Research Data Centers, the National Center for Healthcare Statistics, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and the Agricultural Resource Management Survey. Okay. A key element of this analysis is the identification of high-level requirements for the data that include administrative and operational requirements for long-term housing, maintenance, security, and linkage of the two databases, along with annual cost estimates for staffing, data access, user support, facilities, you name it, equipment, and an evaluation of how the cost may vary depending upon whether the database is operated or owned by a federal entity or a private or academic entity or some hybrid of the two. In support of that effort, the department independently examined the implications of these models as they relate to applicable law, including FSMA, NIST, and other IT laws, regulations and guidelines, the Privacy Act, FOIA, and the Miscellaneous Receipts Act, and other laws and regulations that might limit the ability of a federal government or a federally funded agency to collect and or retain fees associated with administering this type of system. And we provided that information to Volpe to inform their analysis and their final report to us. While completing the requirements identification, Volpe held a series of meetings with different stakeholders to discuss the long-term stewardship issues in general and specific stakeholder priorities. And so they met with us and NHTSA and a variety of others. And that feedback is reflected in the synthesis or the distillation of the options that they're presenting. So in the end, what we're going to get is 2, 3, we're not sure how many yet, several options that meet those requirements. And basically including annual cost information to allow us to make a better informed decision as to where we want to encourage the long-term ownership and establishing the long-term ownership for this data and any partners that might be involved in the stewardship of it. That report is due in September. So, you know, Volpe has been ahead of schedule on practically everything that they're doing with this, which was one of the most important parts of this study for us. We Sharp 2 had that as a line item, but they weren't prepared to start that until a little later. So in order to get a jump on it, that's how we ended up getting involved with this study. And so they've really been quite good at keeping things on track and hopefully giving us a document that we'll be able to use in a timely manner. All right. So there are a lot of issues associated with this, obviously, but I'm going to boil it down to two, basically. Ownership is the dominant issue or underlying practically everything that they're taking a look at. Federal government ownership brings with it major institutional requirements and standards that have to be met, covering privacy, security, record keeping, exposure to FOIA. I'm not sure if Richard's going to get into any of that, but it's a major concern. These requirements can be expensive and cumbersome, but are considered by many to be best practices. So, you know, how do you balance those? Possession generally means ownership. If the government takes a copy of the data, for instance, if it's only a backup copy, then the government owns that data. So, but ownership for the federal government does not require physical possession of the data. So if the government can unilaterally dictate how to use the data, then the government is considered an owner, even if it's not in actual possession of the data. So these are some interesting challenges that we have to be aware of and to negotiate. At present, TRB owns the data, and the government has access rights to it. But we really haven't exercised those rights, and I don't think we're going to the extent that it would fall into the ownership category, and I don't think we plan to anytime soon. Another important issue relating to this is sustainable funding, and we haven't asked Volpe to address that. Volpe's looking at costs. They're going to provide cost estimates for the options that they're going to present in their final report. However, funding sources to cover those costs, well, cover the cost of any option that gets adopted, need to be secured for the life of the system. And we haven't worked those details out yet. So, I mentioned earlier that we're exploring two exploratory advanced research projects to identify and develop tools to support the efficient use of massive amounts of data. One of them is the automated video data extraction study, which is a 24-month study to automate the analysis of very large quantities of transportation research data and video, and to demonstrate several feature detection and classification algorithms for archived on-road video data sets. This system will demonstrate the effectiveness of advanced machine learning techniques applied to large, diverse data sets, and will lay the groundwork for future development of a comprehensive library of data processing and analysis tools. We're providing up to $200,000 for phase one, and up to $800,000 has been reserved for a follow-on study if phase one produces promising results. The research team for this has been selected, and we're hopefully finalizing contract negotiations as I speak. This has kind of been a long process, but we're hoping that will get up and running relatively soon. All right. So on October 10th through 11th, we're also going to be hosting a workshop at FHWA's Turner Fairbank Highway Research Center in McLean, Virginia, on video analytics, applying automated feature extraction to questions of driver behavior. And I know many of you have probably already seen the announcement for that. This is a two-day event that will provide participants from academia, the private sector, and government with an opportunity to help identify research needs and interests in advancing automation techniques that enable efficient extraction of features from driver behavior video. My office, the Office of Safety R&D, and the Exploratory Advanced Research Program are interested in advancing technology for sensors, video, memory storage, and signal processing that are going to result in, you know, transformative changes to the way that we investigate human behavior and human-machine interaction. Workshop participants will hear from experts on current state of research in video feature extraction, existing video data sets, and they'll have an opportunity to discuss potential new research in this area. So we're kind of excited. This is one of those things that could have tremendous transformative benefits in terms of being able to speed up how we analyze this particular data and minimize your use of grad students. Well, at least for grunt work. This is not... there we go. Okay. So FHWA recently set aside $10 million for SHARP II safety implementation. And within the Federal Highway Administration, we have what we call roadmaps that are devoted to high-priority safety research areas. Well, not just research, but programmatic as well. And it's all data-driven. It's based on where the most fatalities are occurring and what we can actually have an impact on through infrastructure-related solutions. We're in the process of identifying projects from those roadmaps as well as new projects that might be higher risk, more advanced, or longer term studies in those high priority areas that could be addressed using SHARP II safety data. And as background information for that, the roadmap teams have been asked to review those global research question priorities in Appendix B of the SO2 report on integration and analysis methods and development of analysis plan. There's a whole collection of potential research ideas in there to look at those and to consider how they might be relevant to the roadmap priorities. The safety leadership team expects to receive these recommendations from our roadmap teams by the end of this month, and we'll make a selection of our top 10 and coordinate this with our colleagues at NHTSA. We're also working very closely with TRB's SHARP II implementation staff on that effort. All right, so that's a quick overview of the things that we currently have going relevant to SHARP II implementation. I'd like to thank you for your attention and acknowledge the contribution of a member of my staff, Lincoln Cobb. I saw him in here earlier. I don't know where Lincoln is. Ah, there you are. He's our SHARP II safety implementation coordinator and our technical manager for the Volpe study, and he's doing a fabulous job with that. And David Kuhn, is David in here? Okay, great. David is our Exploratory Advanced Research Program Director, and so he's helping to move those two projects along very nicely. So at this point, I will stop and turn it over to Forrest.
I have one.
Yes, sir.
In the first advanced project that you had, it sounded like it's all types of video data, transportation video data. Is the SHARP 2 data automatically in there?
We're going to give them a sample of the SHARP 2 data.
Okay.
Where's David? We've been negotiating. That project was submitted with one scope of work, and what's taken so long with it is we asked them to make quite a few significant changes to what they proposed, one of which is so that we can include the SHARP a portion of the SHARP 2 safety data. Do you want to elaborate at all on that, David?
So the what they're doing is they're looking at roadway data, but they're also looking at driver data. And so the negotiation was to emphasize more of the driver data, but the group is looking at both. I think the difference between what we're working on with this award versus what we're focusing on in the workshop is in the workshop we're looking very exclusively at the driver behavior data, and besides just looking at what is sort of the technology around the extraction issue and why it may be more difficult than feature extraction in other types of environments. We're also in the workshop trying to tie that very closely to, and I think this something that was reinforced from the talk earlier, is what you're looking for depends on what you're trying to study. So the question is, what do you need to extract, and what are key behavior or inattention problems we're looking for, and what may be the differences in terms of the algorithms that you may need to be able to identify. And of course, this is for research purposes. It doesn't need to be perfect. It just needs to get us close, mm-hmm. so you don't have to look at hours and hours
right.
of video. Maybe you're just looking at a few minutes around where we think there is some behavior tied to inattention.
Yep.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Good morning. I'll just say I wasn't actually aware I was speaking at this meeting, so I don't have slides prepared. And I do want to thank Forrest. After Ken talked about how long David and Joanne had been associated with SHARP, he didn't mention how long he and I have been involved in SHARP, because it's much longer. And I also just wanted to say something, because people talk a lot about the 100-car study as a and it was a great entree into naturalistic driving, but it was a pilot study. A bunch of us at NHTSA had talked about the need for exposure data, and we spent a number of years talking about it, and we laid out plans for a 2,000 to 4,000 car study, and we started talking with senior management, and they had a tremendous heartburn at what we estimated the expense would be, and they finally agreed that we could do a 100-car pilot as a predecessor to show the value of collecting this kind of information. And luckily for us, with the funding for the SHARP program with TRB and SHARP, we didn't have to try to raise the money for the full-scale study. It's taken place here under the SHARP program. Okay. I don't have a whole lot to add to what Monique said. NHTSA has been involved and certainly actively involved in the whole issue of ownership and stewardship of this data. I think we were the first to recognize when we started looking deeply into the size and characteristics of this data that it was very different from our typical post-crash databases, and we started recognizing many of the implications of it, and especially what we anticipated to be the cost implications and the implications for access, and felt like there were probably better approaches than having the federal government be the official owner. of this data that would better fulfill the recognized plans for collecting this data and having it publicly available to qualified researchers in the U.S. and around the world. And I think in the next year or so, we will come up with a plan that will, in fact, be viable and will meet that goal. The only other thing I think I'll really mention is that we have been giving a fair amount of thought to ways we at NHTSA would use this data, because we have many diverse research needs. And I thought I would just mention a small number. We've been going through sort of a process of trying to prioritize what we think would be sort of the first things we plan to use the SHARP data for. And these priority areas are data-driven, so we are looking at what we consider to be significant issues that play a role in lots of crashes. They are typically things that are not well understood and not easily understood through post-crash investigation, where actual exposure and pre-crash driving behavior would make a tremendous difference in understanding how driver behavior contributes to crashes. So, what are they? Well, number one priority right now, especially given our secretary of the Department of Transportation, is driver distraction. And we have a long way to go to really firmly understand all the various forms of secondary tasks and things drivers do when they're driving, and what actually is the risk involved. And as David Chouinard laid out, this long history of trying to understand inattention by drivers. So we definitely need a better understanding of the risks of the various forms of distraction, whether manual, visual, and cognitive. People engage in lots of non-driving behaviors. That's always been known. They'll continue to do so. They may do even more in the future with the plethora of electronic devices being built into cars and being brought in. Clearly, we want to get a better understanding of OEM systems that are in cars nowadays versus nomadic devices. The OEMs are conscientiously working to try to make this stuff safer, and one hopes they are succeeding, but we have no data relating to this, and we don't even have a really good understanding of how people use the built-in systems versus nomadic systems, and we're hoping data like the SHARP data will help contribute to a much better understanding. Even things like we recently released some visual manual distraction guidelines, and you know, trying to validate the performance measures that underline those would be great. It's very unfortunate we're not getting as much advanced technology in vehicles in these fleets, but those are also areas that are of vital importance to us. Things which we would name sort of elusive driver behaviors that are often a primary concern to states and law enforcement, things like aggressive driving and drowsy driving that are extremely hard to document. And as David Chouinard talked about, you know, you come sometimes on crashes and you eliminate all sorts of possible causes, and so you're left inferring the person fell asleep or the person, you know, was doing this or that. And we see people engage in highly risky behavior. But these are things that are very hard to study, and we expect naturalistic driving data to give us some real understanding into things like that. Another one on my side of the shop that I have always been a critical issue is speeding behavior. We talk a lot about how speeding contributes to the occurrence of crashes, but as David's presentation said, our inference of causality is based on really lousy data at this point. We just don't understand the circumstances and situations in which driver choice of vehicle speed really does contribute to their increased risk of getting in a crash, and we are hopeful that this kind of data will actually bring us some new insights and new ways to control and improve driving behavior. see. The only other thing I might mention, we would like very much to get a better understanding, and I think this is one of the first things we'll tackle with this data, is the relationship between crashes, near crashes, and critical maneuvers. And because there will always be a dearth of crashes in this kind of data, it's very, very important to get a good empirical understanding of the relationship between those so that some of these intermediate measures can be used to understand. So I've mentioned things we've identified so far as priority research areas. There's many other topics we think this data will be useful for, but I'm going to stop at that point. And if anyone has questions?
Anything other than lunch? Okay, we're breaking for lunch, and it's out in the lobby, and we're scheduled to be back here at 1 o'clock, so you have 54 minutes. Enjoy. The gong will be sounded.
The organizer has ended the session, and this call will be disconnected. Goodbye.